and welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Before we get started, do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help women's wear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now on to the episode. Today I'm joined by Suzanne Vinnick of By Vinnick. So welcome, Suzanne.
Hi.
Hi. For those listening who are meeting you for the first time, could you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Well, I'm Suzanne Vinnick. I am the fashion designer behind the brand By Vinnick. Previous to starting my clothing line, I was an opera singer and then transitioned to running my clothing line and designing and making ethical, inclusive apparel for everybody who wants to wear it.
Well, so cool. So I'm curious, what made you start a fashion brand? Like, do you have any background in fashion, or what brought you into fashion after being in opera?
So my journey to getting into fashion is kind of weird. So when I first started off, I was originally selling and renting the concert gowns that I wore when I was singing, because I would have, you know, sometimes 10 to 30 concerts a year. And for each one, I'd pretty much have to wear a new gown if it was, you know, something that was super high profile that was photographed. And these gowns, they cost a lot of money because you can't wear some trash from, I'm not going to say where, you can't wear some trashy gown to go and perform for the Queen of Norway or, you know, in front of Congress with the president there. So you have to dress for the occasion. And a lot of the times being a performing artist, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. So I'd be performing for people who are like the top 1% of wealth in the world. And I would be looking at my bank account and be like, ooh, I really hope that they pay me tonight so I can pay my bills. So I started renting and again, selling my concert gowns to my colleagues. I started a Facebook group and I invited like maybe 10 or 15 friends to it at first. And by the end of the week, there were hundreds and hundreds of opera singers who had joined this Facebook group. So from about 2013 to 2018, I was just hardcore selling my gowns, renting my gowns, making alterations to them so they would fit multiple sizes, because I saw such a need, especially for my plus size friends. And I mean, even myself as a mid singer as well, like it was just hard to find things that actually fit. So I was, you know, making huge modifications to them, like taking the backs out of them, adding extra panels in. And then I would buy, you know, gowns that were, they had damage to them, and I would kind of repurpose them and make the, and just fix them so they could be worn again. And they could be worn by a lot of different people and a lot of different body types as well. From there, I started selling vintage, and I had for a while a peer-to-peer marketplace that we had until we had some unscrupulous developers who destroyed the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started my clothing line, because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I no longer have this other business. I no longer have this platform. And I had just started doing some design with another, with a local manufacturer here in LA. And I was like, okay, like it's, let's try this. That's how it came to be.
Yeah, that's such a cool story. And I imagine, like, even, you know, like fit is a big issue in general in fashion. And certainly, you know, especially fitting for, you know, plus size bodies. But I imagine as a singer, too, you need to be able to breathe in the gown, you know,
absolutely.
You know, that even was more than the average person, because you're using this as part of your performance and it needs to function well and be comfortable for you too.
Exactly. So I learned a lot from my gowns and my gown alterations. And then again, when I was doing vintage, because I had to measure every single garment that came through my hands, I had to measure the bust, the waist, the hips, the length, the inseam, the like just every, I got to really know garments very well. And so when I started doing fashion design, I already knew like the armpits on something, they need to be like this. The shape of the back of a pair of pants needs to be a little bit higher. So I had already kind of figured out fit from these other experiences with both my gowns and then with vintage as well.
So with your own brand then, like what were some of the things that you kind of set out to do differently, like specific things, or kind of what was the concept behind the brand and the pieces that you now design and sell?
I think when I first started, I was still looking at my brand as a side hustle because I was still planning on singing. I was also, you know, doing photography, and I was doing mainly things with an opera. I was applying for jobs on the admin side. And when I started this line, like I really thought I would just make a few pieces and then I would just continue doing everything else that I was doing and go about my happy life. But that really was not the case. And it just kind of blew up and it kind of took on a life of its own. I think in part to the garments that I was designing, because I made my first release, I had this one shoulder top that could be worn a bunch of different ways. And it could be worn by people of many different sizes and shapes. It could be dressed up, it could be dressed down. And that was something that I took with me for all of the remainder of the garments that I've made, you know, even until today, is they have to be able to fit multiple body types. They have to be something that they can change. They have to be shapeshifters. They have to be something that, you know, you can wear to an opera gala, but you can also wear it to Home Depot with a pair of jeans. You know, it just had to be something that could transform and that could be styled differently. And it could appeal to a lot of different people, but also to people who really love standing out in a crowd.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really struck me, like about your brand and story, and you know, from like reading your website and stuff and your designs too, is that they're very bold. Like they're not afraid to like take the stage confidently. Is that something that kind of has always been a part of you, or is it's just kind of like boldness something that you cultivate?
Well, for me, I started off my career as a child performer in Las Vegas. So from there, you already kind of, you're going to kind of know who I am. It was like, I've always been a performer. I've always been in the spotlight. I've always been somebody who has been, I've had to be a big personality on stage because in order, you know, to get the applause and to have the audience enjoy what you're doing, you have to be bold. And I think with my fashion sensibility, it really derives from that. Like I am in the spotlight right now. I'm alone, but I'm in front of everybody. And that's kind of how I view fashion, is that like when you put these clothes on, it's as much for you to feel great as for other people to look at you and be like, wow, that looks amazing.
Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah. Do you have any, I think, you know, many people, especially women, are kind of afraid of the spotlight sometimes and are afraid of kind of being themselves. Do you have any tips, you know, from your career and from, you know, making this practice out of, you know, taking that space and being in front of people, that on how other women can really take the stage in their own life?
I've seen it time and time again with my clientele. We've had people who have said to me, they've said, you know, before I discovered Byvinic, the clothes that I would find out in the world, I just felt like a monster. I felt like nobody saw me. I felt like nobody understood who I am and who I want to be. I was just wearing black. I was just wearing things regardless of whether they fit well or they helped me, you know, let out my personality and my individuality. So I've already done that with my clothing line. And I think really anybody who wants to stand out, who wants to have more confidence, I think there are brands out there that are doing really great work, especially now in plus sizes that you just didn't see even 5 years, a decade ago. Like there's so many incredible brands that are out there that, you know, are really listening to their customers and are really designing the types of clothes that empower people to feel the best that they can absolutely feel. Like I know when I go into designing any piece that I do, I have to be able to think of at least 3 to 5 customers who would wear that specific piece. When I'm outsourcing fabric, I'm like, oh, she would love this print. Oh, this would be great for this one. And I'm really thinking of my clientele as not just customers. They are my muses. They are the people who inspire me. And I think there are other brands that really do design in that way too, especially when you're working with independent designers. I hope that answered your question, but I think for somebody who's looking to gain more confidence, look and find the clothes that allow you to do that. And they're out there. You just have to look a little bit harder because, you know, we don't have the sponsored post. The algorithm does not favor us, but we're out there. And if you do a little work, a little homework on your end, you can find us because we desperately want to make you feel amazing.
I totally agree that, you know, the independent brands are the ones who are really putting the customer first and like the personalized view, like they know who their customer is and are doing a better job of making clothes that really fit them and fit their personality and see them as a person. And I totally love that. And I love that you have that as the forefront of how you design and select your fabrics.
Yeah.
I know you, so on your blog, you have a post called The Importance of Being Seen in Fashion. It kind of ties into that whole conversation about your customers, how your customers feel wearing your designs, and even like how fashion has given you a purpose. Can you talk more about that and maybe share what are some transformations that you've seen in your customers, you know, since wearing your brand, and maybe some transformations that you've experienced as well through this?
I think it, as an online brand, it's hard to see the reaction to the pieces, you know, through a computer screen or through just like an order or even during my live sales. Like people get excited about them, but I can't see that excitement. So I think for me, when I'm doing in-person events, when we do our pop-ups, we're really looking to do a lot more in-person events this upcoming year. And we're looking for a space where we can actually host monthly experiential shopping experiences. I think for me, it's seeing people come to our racks when we've done these events and say, oh, there's nothing on here for me. There's nothing that's going to fit me. There's nothing that's for me. And it's honestly grabbing the pieces that I'm like, I see these people and I'm like, you are a beautiful person. Like I have something for you. And I grab hangers and I take them and I say, go try this on right now. Like, and they're like, oh no, I don't want to. And I'm like, just trust me here. Just, I'll come with you. Like, let's do this. Like, let's have this experience together. And if you hate it, I will not be offended and we can hug. And regardless, I think you're great. And every time I've done this without fail, the person, they come out of the fitting room of these, you know, pop-up events and they're sobbing in tears and they're saying to me, I feel seen. This is the best I've ever felt in my entire life. Can I buy this dress in every color? Or can I get this coat in every color? And for me, that's just something that I know, like, I cannot even express how, like, I'm getting teary-eyed just even like thinking back to some of these moments. It's like, it's just such an incredible experience to see other women and see themselves the way that I see them in my designs and like in the potential that they have to look and feel incredible when they've been largely ignored by the fashion industry. So for me, that's probably the biggest thing. That blog article that you're referencing, I actually wrote that. I had just put something up on Facebook and I had just a flood of messages of my clientele that they were like, you know, this is the first time I've ever felt seen by a brand. This is the first time I've ever dressed in a way that expresses my individuality and allows other people to see who I am. And so for me, it's just as a designer and even beyond being a designer, woman to woman seeing that, it's just, it's something that you can't even put into words how special it is.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's one of the favorite moments of my job is when I see some, you know, somebody, whether the fit model or customer or the designer, like try on a piece and their face lights up, like seeing that smile and seeing like, and multiple times people have danced around in it, you know, like you can tell they're just so happy
wearing it, and that's so satisfying and fulfilling. That's always my goal, is to create a piece of clothing that makes somebody feel like that.
Exactly. And I just think that there's so much more possibility for brands, like even not the independent brands, but for brands just in general, to really hone in on who their customer is and to give everybody that opportunity to feel incredible. I know that I have customers for life. I have people that when I announced that I was pregnant, they were like, "Will you make a baby registry?" And I was like, "Are you serious right now?" Huh. And like, people were sending me gifts and like telling me like how much I mean to them in their lives. And like, and I'm just like, you know, I'm just a fashion designer. I'm just like over here doing my own thing, like making clothes. And to know that like, I now have, if I went to any state in the country, like I know if I like picked up the phone and called one of my customers, I'd have somebody to go out to lunch with. And like, it's just such a rewarding experience. Like I have people when I've done pop-ups who have driven in from other states to come or flown across the country. It's just, you know, my success as a designer is also their success too, because Byvinic is such, it's become more than just clothes. It's a community. It's just a place where we all accept one another, and we're the misfits of fashion. We, you know, we're bold. We take up space. We wear loud colors. We have fun. It's really just become this incredible community that I could have never imagined when I started my air quotes side hustle in May of 2019.
It's wonderful how some of those things were like, you don't even realize the full potential of what it's going to become. But then looking back, you're like, this is huge. This is amazing. And so congrats on getting to where you are with that. I bet that is so fulfilling.
Extremely.
So I can tell that like these kind of personalized relationships with your customers, your clients, and even how you mentioned going fabric shopping, you would, you know, a certain print would stand out as this particular person would love it. What things are you doing to really create those personal relationships with other people in this community? And, you know, whether intentional or intentional, what has led to this community?
Originally, it started because, again, I was an opera singer and I was performing all over the world. And again, I had my Facebook group that just grew and now has like over 10,000 members who are part of this Facebook group. So it really started off really with my operatic community. And then over time, it's grown to the mid-size, the plus size. I have a lot of customers who are also like disabled. I have a lot of people who they've just been completely ignored from fashion. And they know that if they come to me, they know I'm going to take the time and I'm going to take something that I already have and I'm going to make it work for them. And I'm going to put my whole heart into every piece that I send out. And I also go live every week, at least every Tuesday. Sometimes I go live more throughout the week if I have the time to do that. And my live sales, they're as much entertainment as they are about selling clothes. Like I have people who they tune in every week and they're just like, they just like watching because they make friends. We've had people who've met up, you know, from watching live sales, they've been gone to another city, they've met up and they've made friendships through my brand. And it's just such an incredible experience. And then again, like this past year, we just started doing pop-ups. I did the Curvy Fashionista brunch, which was just, that was such a game changer for me to be out there interacting with the public, seeing my pieces for the first time. And I have formed like so many friendships, even from that brunch, and so many customers who have come back time and time again. They discovered my brand there and maybe they didn't purchase that day, but they've come back and they've purchased time and time again. And, you know, we've had them at our office for other events. We've invited them out for other events. I've gone out to dinner with some of them. It's, you know, for me, so much about what I do, like as a designer, you're by yourself and you're in your thoughts as a creative, you know, you're spending the time like editing photos and writing copy and doing all the writing, you know, newsletters and posting stuff on Instagram and doing all of this work behind the scenes. It's very quiet work. But for me, it's the loud work that I really love, where it's just getting out and just meeting people and being that social butterfly. And I think that's why my brand has done really well. And I would highly encourage any other designer, any other brand to really just get out there and meet your customer, whether it's online doing live sales, whether it's opening up chats, whether it's, you know, doing in-person events. It's the thing that's going to totally change your business.
Yeah. Connecting with your customer is huge. And it sounds like it's really paid off for you both on like the brand side, but also just like the personal side of the relationships you've been able to build and friendships you've been able to find through doing this.
And I'll just say, like, I've learned so much from just so many of my customers who walk different lives than I walk. And it's just, it's one of those things, like, I would have never known that I would have this type of community and this type of life. If you told me 10 years ago that I was going to be a fashion designer, I would laugh in your face. I'd be like, what are you talking about? I am an opera singer. Like, my whole identity was wrapped up in being an opera singer. And to now, my whole identity is now being a fashion designer. So it's just, it's a really crazy thing. And I'm so glad that it happened for me and it happened the way that it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you like completely kind of full-time with the fashion design business now? And are you singing opera anymore?
So I've retired from singing and I've pretty much burned every bridge that there is to burn within opera, especially during the pandemic. Because, you know, when I first started my line, I was still singing. I was still performing. I had decided to take a step back from some of my singing engagements and really only do the high paid ones, because then I could still focus on my clothing line. And I was like, okay, I'll just be gone like a few months out of the year. Fine. And then the lockdowns happened basically a year to the day that we're speaking right now. And all of my singing engagements, every one of them got canceled. They got rescheduled. And fortunately I had Bivenic to kind of lean on. It was very much in its infancy. It was like, I'd only been around for a few months doing this, but like, I literally launched my website 2 weeks before the lockdowns happened. So it was before then I was just doing everything like on social media through DMs or through my Facebook group, or, you know, if you knew, when I was doing a drop. But I just saw like how toxic the opera industry was. And I just saw like people who had been, you know, at the top of the industry, they were basically like begging people to help them because they couldn't pay their bills. They couldn't afford groceries. Like, on multiple occasions, I was like, you know what, you need this money more than I do. And like, I'd make a sale of something and I would just send the money to people that I knew really needed to just buy groceries, or, you know, they just needed that extra support. So I basically just left opera, and I have no intentions of really ever going back, just because it's a toxic industry. But I am doing fashion full time. Really, during the pandemic, that was when I was like, okay, I have this other thing. If I put some effort in, if I'm determined, if I focus, if I figure out how to do social media, and if I figure out how to reach outside of my own community, like, I think I can make this a business. And week after week, I was designing new pieces. I was doing more things. I was trying, I was experimenting. And I really was super hyper focused on just learning everything that I could about fashion design while doing it. And, you know, I built this business and now I have a full-time employee in California. I work with an all-female owned sewing room. They pay everybody living wages. It's just, I just know with Bivenic, all of the other businesses, even within my community, my fashion community, we all support one another. And it's just incredible. I totally got off topic.
No, you didn't. And I think that brings up some interesting points too, of the, you know, because fashion also kind of has the stereotype of being a toxic industry and underpaid and undervalued. I mean, I feel like the arts are in general, but it sounds like that you've been able to build kind of this business to combat some of that you didn't like about the opera industry, and that is commonly not done well in the fashion industry as well, where you have this community, you're able to support yourself and others with fair wages. And I would agree too that kind of the independent designer or slow fashion community is very supportive and doesn't have that toxic stereotype that kind of the fashion industry as a whole does, where we're all kind of in this together. And it's really cool to see how collaborative so many people are within slow fashion.
Absolutely. And it's, I love, like when I first set out to start my business, I knew that I wanted to have an ethical clothing line because I had stopped wearing fast fashion years ago. And I pretty much would only wear stuff that was made in the United States. And I would only wear vintage. And if I couldn't afford the ethical brands, I would shop, vintage first and secondhand first, resale, et cetera. So I knew when I started my line, I was like, the garments, they're going to have to be a higher price point. Like that was just inevitable. But it was very important to me that every hand that works on my garments is benefited from its existence because, there's so many companies that will greenwash until they turn into a green goblin. But like the truth of the matter is, you can make something out of a mushroom, you can make something out of these, eco-friendly textiles. But if the people making the garments aren't being paid and can't, buy food, pay their bills, pay their rent, like if they can't meet those basic needs, what you're doing doesn't even matter. So for me, it's so much about the people. Because as an opera singer, like you said earlier, like I was exploited pretty much my entire career. Like I was never paid my worth. Like I would be doing these gigs where it was like, yes, I made a good fee per performance, but if I got sick, I either had to go on performing with strep throat to get my fee and sometimes, not sing well, or it was like, okay, there's a third of my annual income that's gone. It's like you could have done 8 weeks of rehearsal, but if you don't get on stage and perform, then too bad, you don't get paid because you only got paid for the performances. And so for me with fashion design, it was just so important to me to just do it the right way and to let, my vendors also set prices and to, just not nickel and dime people and not harass people about, like, well, can you do this for less? If somebody says to me, sorry, Suzanne, like your budget, my budget, they don't meet together, I say, you know what? Thank you for telling me that. And when I am able to do that, I will come to you first. And I always do.
Yeah, I think that's a better way to do things. And yeah, I always recommend to my clients, like, if you need to reduce the cost, don't say, can you do it for less? Ask, how can I adjust my design to simplify it, to make the work easier, faster, in order to reduce the cost? That's a question of you're not asking them to lower their fee, lower their rate. You're asking just how can I reduce the complexity so that
Exactly.
you're still paid well, but I'm able to keep it within the budget that I'm working with.
Absolutely. I mean, there's been so many times, like there was my cocoon coat. It originally had 26 interior pleats in it. The
Oh,
coats
wow.
they took hours and hours and hours and hours to make. And I was and my sewing team, she said to me, she's like, I don't think we need all of these pleats inside of it because it doesn't really change the design. So I was like, well, let's make a sample. Let's just have you make a sample. We'll take the pleats out of it. And, it worked better for both of us because it was like she wasn't spending as much time having to make it. And literally, the overall design did not change by having these 26 interior pleats that were made with quilted fabric that were so hard to sew. And it was just having somebody else say that to me, being like, why are you doing it this way when we could do it this way? Without, because there's so many brands that will take shortcuts, like they won't line something, or they'll use a finish that's like super cheap, or they'll use, a plastic zipper instead of a metal zipper. And it's like the quality still absolutely must be there. So maybe it's making fewer pieces at a higher price point, or maybe it's taking one thing out to lower the cost, or even like what I've done with several of my pieces is we say, okay, well, what if we do more volume of them and we get, a dollar or two off of those. And then I just produce them for the entire year right now. And usually that's like, there's always negotiation with your people that you're working with when you are a designer and a brand owner, but it has to be something that is beneficial to them because they are able to work, and it has to be beneficial to us. So that way we can stay in business as well. Cause if you have a product that's just that nobody can afford and nobody can buy, it's what's the point? Cause you're not going to sell anything.
Yeah. It's balancing the affordability to the customer buying it, but then the profitability to sustain the people making it and making sure it's fair to both sides.
Absolutely. And it must be fair to everybody who's doing the work. Like for me, the garment worker is more important than even I am. Like I just have such a huge respect for everybody that we work with. Like again, like my sewing studio, it's the grandmother, the mother, and the daughter, and they're all working together, and they have this incredible team that's primarily all women sewing. And it's just, you know, I know that the work that we're able to do together, I know that everybody is benefiting from it. And, you know, the customer who gets those garments, they have good vibes to it. If the people making the garments are unhappy, you feel that in the clothes. Like I think clothes have like, this is maybe like some nonsense, but like to me, like, I feel like you can truly feel the soul of the clothes because so many hands touch it when you're wearing by Vinnig.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds kind of like out there and like, I don't have any science to back that up, but I do agree that
there is zero science.
There's zero science, but no, it's true and I think it's one thing that's so often overlooked in clothing in general is that craftsmanship that goes into it. Like the people who make the clothes are actual people. It's not robots.
No.
And they're highly skilled, and the amount of work and design and thought that goes into creating the product and sewing it and pricing it and, you know, putting it out into the world and sharing it with people. You can see that personality in the clothes. And I think that makes them more special when that is highlighted.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned that you have somebody working with you full time, as well as this sewing studio that's making the pieces. Is there anyone else that like works with you, and kind of what is your team like?
So we are small but mighty. I do a lot with my brand. Like I do a lot. The only thing that I have basically like stopped doing is packing orders, except for on New Year's Eve. That is the one day that I come in and I pack the orders, so we get it all in under that year. But I have an incredible right-hand woman. We call her the fashion sheriff. Leah has just become a really integral part of the business, from handling customer support to now overseeing all of my production as well. Because this past year I got pregnant and I just had a baby. So she's been really great in overseeing all of the different people that we work with, whether it's, you know, the marker company, like making sure that we get the markers done and then bringing them to the cutter and then making sure the cuts from the cutter get to our sewing studio, making sure that they get packed properly and then bringing them back to the office, doing all the inventory and then, you know, managing my live sales, handling emails, packing up the car for when we have our photo shoots, sometimes taking photos during our photo shoots when I step into model, because I do a lot of the photography for my line. I do most of it myself. Oh. I'm very, as you can see, I'm kind of a little bit of a control freak a lot. But Leah has just been, she's incredible. And she, again, she was somebody who went to school for classical music and, you know, got a master's degree in opera, but has also made this transition with me to the world of fashion. And we both are always like, if we can figure this out and we went to school for opera, and like with me, I'm like, and I performed all over the world singing opera, like anybody could figure this out. This is not rocket science. Like it's just, you just have to take the time to learn how to do it the right way and just replicate doing it the right way each time. But we also, we bring in, like we have fit models that we work with. We have different colleagues of ours from the performing arts that, you know, when they're not performing or they don't have a gig or they have, you know, just some kind of slow time in their schedule, we bring them in. We're like, hey, can you come help us organize the office? Because it looks like a bomb went off. There's clothes everywhere. We've just done a photo shoot. Can you help us unpack after the shoot? Or we have an event coming up. Can you help us come and tag the garments? Whether it's, you know, if we're going to a trade show, they're a different tag versus what if we're doing a pop-up, they have, it's just a different tag. But that's been great. We've had people come in and do my live sales. When I was giving birth, there was a live sale going on. And we've just had different people that we've been able to bring in just as more of like a supplemental to things that they're already doing. And they really enjoy it. And it's just, you know, it's just nice being able to provide some kind of financial security for even other performers, even if it's temporary, just bringing in friends to even model and, you know, doing it all.
Yeah, it takes a village, but it's a community, really. Like, you're supporting each other, and that it sounds like what you were doing as when you were an opera singer, but you're able to do that kind of more so and make sure people are, you know, paid fairly now that you are running your business. So
it's the most important thing. I'm like, if you're not getting paid, it's not work. Like if there's no, if you are not being paid, like you are, like it's wrong. Like you should be paid. If you are doing work, you should be paid. Period. Mm-hmm. End of story.
Yeah, I'm with you where it's like, if you can't afford to hire people in your business, like, are you really running a business? Like, you know, yeah. Is it doing that well? If you're doing well enough to need more help, then do well enough to pay people to do the
exactly.
work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so there was a few things that you kind of mentioned that I want to go back into, like, one being, you know, you're new to the fashion industry and Leah as well. And I love that you both have that background in music that, you know, have can bond over. But what were some of the things being new to fashion in the beginning that were maybe like the biggest learning curves for you? And what things kind of from the music world and your career beforehand have really helped you run this business from, yeah, your past experiences?
I think I've had to learn everything the hard way when it comes to fashion. Mm-hmm. I've definitely had to learn everything the hard way, from finding the right people to work with, finding the right suppliers, finding the right sewing rooms, finding the right cutters, finding the right people to do the job that you need to have done. Mm-hmm. When I first started my line, you know, it was very much like onesie, twosie, everything was made to order. And then I would do, you know, these weekly collections from 2020, from pretty much during the middle of the pandemic. I think it was June 2020 until early 2022. I was making a new collection every single week, and I was doing,
wow,
making 40 pieces made from dead stock fabrics or existing textiles, in addition to all of the orders that would come in through my website. And it got to be, I kind of outgrew the made to order model because, you know, I was getting the measurements, adjusting all of the patterns, and it was just,
wow.
It was,
that's a lot of work.
Yes. And it was like, it just got to be too much. And it was like, okay, like if I am going to continue to exist as a human being on this planet, something's got to give. And so I stopped doing made to order. I changed manufacturers also because the quality, we couldn't keep up doing the made to order and have it out fast enough for people. Cause we would get 8,000 emails. Where is my garment? Where is it? I need this now. And it's like, these things take time. Like, it doesn't happen. You don't just snap your fingers and, you know,
this isn't Amazon.
No, I was like, a pattern just doesn't regrade itself. Like you have to measure, you have to like test it. You have to make sure that it's right. And, you know, without having the customer, you know, in the studio to like sew it on their bodies, like there's going to be things that will need to be adjusted, that it's like explaining that to the client. You may need to take this to your tailor, because you are not here. We are not draping this on your body. Like it's, you know, it's just working with what we have. Like if you didn't take your measurements correctly, it's not going to be correct. So it was just, you know, a lot of that was happening. And I decided to just stop what I was doing and regroup. I had put myself in the hospital. I was super, super sick. And I just like could not get better. Like I was so sick. I had all these GI issues for well over a year. And I think it was really like my body telling me, you've done too much. This is ridiculous. Like, you do not pass go, do not collect $300. You need to step this one out and you need to regroup and figure it out. So from there, I went to doing ready to wear. And so I took all of my customers' measurements that I had accrued over that time. I had several hundreds of measurements that I went through and I figured out, and I said, you know, what size do my customers think they are? Because I would always say, what numerical clothing size do you wear? What letter size associates with the measurements that you're sending me? And I would see that it was just all over the place. It made absolutely no sense. And so I created a size chart that was based directly off of my clientele's measurements. And when I redid all of my patterns, I made sure that they would fit all of my clientele, that, you know, the entire size chart of anybody who had placed an order with me up until that point. And I digitized all of my patterns. We have a grader that we work with who's really great. It's not just about, with my designs, it's not just about like, oh, we just add 2 inches, add an inch here. It's for the original size stuff, the small through extra large. That is one set of patterns. And then my plus size patterns are a completely different pattern. It's not just grading up from, you know, a size six and suddenly wishfully thinking that it's going to fit 3X. Like, it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah. So
it was just totally regrouping and kind of redoing my brand, like starting from zero again. So I was doing basically what you would call contract manufacturing, where you have your set designs, you have a certain amount of them produced, and then you make them, you sell them, whatever. And we had a production manager that was overseeing everything. And there were just getting to be a lot of issues with the garments. We had just stuff that was cut wrong. There was no accountability. And so the third stop and start of my business, right when I found out that I was pregnant last February, Leah and I, we both decided, we were like, you know what? We're not going to stay in business if we continue having all of these messed up cuts and we have fabric that's missing. And there's, you know, there's some fishy stuff going on here. Like, we need to, we just need to take this in house and we need to figure out how to do it ourselves. And we need to find better people that are trustworthy and that are going to be the right team, so we can actually not only just have this business survive, but to get to the next level and to, you know, be something that's not like constantly every week, like, are we going to go out of business? Because that's what happens to so many indie fashion brands. It's like, how do we keep the lights on? So for us, it was, again, regrouping, figuring out what works really well for us and figuring out what didn't work for us at all. And so we decided to do all of our own production management. We work with one sewing studio that is, again, really great, that we have a great relationship with. We trust them. They trust us. But then during this process, we moved our warehouse, like, of all of our fabric, notions, everything. We had to move last year 3 different times. The first cutter that we went with, he died like 2 weeks after we started working with him. And we only found out because we were like, we put in this cut and like, we can't get a hold of him. Like, what's going on? And so Leah went down there and there was another brand that was like, you need to collect everything. The warehouse is closing tomorrow. I've been paying for it while he's been gone. And, you know, I'm not paying for this anymore. So everybody needs to get their stuff and get out. And so it was like, oh, okay. This is a Friday afternoon that I'm finding this out. And it was like, we had to find a new warehouse to move it, a new cutter to finish the cuts that we had already started. And it last year was just chaos. It was chaos.
It sounds like it. Yeah.
But I learned a lot. And I also learned, you know, you have to trust the people that you're working with. You have to work with trustworthy people. And if somebody says, I'm a good person, I'm so nice, I'm such a good person, those are the people you need to run away from first. Like, that is the red flag. So if somebody in fashion is like, I'm a good person, I'm a nice person, you need to run. You need to run.
Yeah. Cause normally nice people don't need to qualify that.
Exactly.
It's just evident. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. It seems like it's been kind of a wild journey and lots to work on and figure out like what to do with. So like, how do you decide like what to prioritize and with these big decisions, and how do you make sure that you don't kind of burn yourself out and get into another situation where you're like hospitalized from doing too much?
Well, I'm terrible when it comes to boundaries. I'm really bad at it. Again, because I do have that open communication with my clientele. Like, I have very bad boundaries, and I'm not very good at just stopping the work. But now that I have a 5-month-old, it's like, no, like, I actually cannot do this. Like, I cannot be there. I cannot overextend myself because I have to take care of this other living human being. So, sorry, got to pass on this one. Bye. But I think for us, it's really been just figuring out what works best for us and also being able to be flexible as well. So if something is not working, it's figuring out, okay, what's the problem and how do we fix this quickly? And how do we solve this problem so it doesn't snowball and become, something more chaotic? But I think both myself and Leah, having been getting to the second part of your question that you asked, 20 minutes ago, being a musician and being a classical musician and being, a performer where my body was my instrument, it's figuring out and it's taking ownership of what doesn't go right and figuring out how to retool it to make it better. And I also think that as a classical musician, I had just such incredible discipline from the time that I was a small child performing that, like I'm very focused. And that's something too with Leah. It's like as a musician, you have to be able to sit alone with your thoughts and figure out how can you do this better and get the work done. The show must go on, and figuring out how to make the show go on and to get everything in order so that it can happen. And I will say, like, since we took over our production, like last year was it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. But I learned so much. And I know now the mistakes. I know the pitfalls. I know a lot more than when I initially started my business. I know more than I would even want to know. But I think that we have a really great way of producing our garments. I think we have a really good handle on the day-to-day, what we're doing, how we're doing it, even being a small team of two. I think that background being a classical musician is just, I don't think I would be a good designer if I didn't come from that other world.
Like you had the background of learning how, like practicing, learning something new, the discipline of like daily showing up to get better and better at something.
And thriving while making mistakes. Like that's, as a musician, like you make more mistakes. Like part of the journey is making mistakes, and it's figuring out constantly how to do something better the next time, or it just being open to the possibilities. Like that's what I always say to people too, that even outside of fashion design that are like coming to me for business advice, I always say, be open to the possibility of yes. Like be open to the universe, listen, take note, take personal responsibility. If something is not good, do it better. Like I've had designs that they sucked. Like they sucked. They were no good. And people are like, why aren't you producing this? We've spent so much time working on this. I was like, and after it's done, I'm just like, because it sucks. Like it's not good enough. And it's sometimes knowing when you just need to stop and do something else, or there's room for improvement on the thing that you're doing as well.
Yeah, and that's a skill to realize, which one of those it is. So,
Does it suck or does it need improvement?
yeah. And it's sometimes hard to know, and as like an artist or performer or designer, to which one is it. And that's where I think having somebody else to bounce ideas off of, or to have very strong kind of like self-awareness, and to be able to like step away and then look at it again with a more like objective view. But it can be difficult to know.
And I think something that has helped me with my business too is not producing, tons and tons. And I produce a lot of merchandise, but I produce a lot of things in different prints. So I'll have the same style and I'll run it sometimes in, anywhere from 3 to 30 prints. With some of like my opera coats and my Parisian coats, I've now done hundreds of prints in them because people love the silhouette. I have the same customer who has, you know, 20 of them that it's like the only thing that she loves wearing. So that's all she wears. She is a diehard Parisian. We love you, Dottie. But it's really figuring out the styles that resonate with people and then figuring out how to replicate them. Because I found even with myself, like I look at my shoes and I'm like, oh God, I literally have the same pair of shoes. Just every one of them is just like a slight variation on that one style that I really like. So I think when people are also shopping for clothes and when people are, you know, figuring out what their personal sense of style is, we tend to find things that we really like. And then we want to replicate those things over and over, whether it's a different print or it's a slight variation or, you know, it's a different length, but it's that same overall aesthetic. And I think that's been something that I've been really good at identifying, like, what are the things that I do really well and doing those things rather than trying to be everything to everybody.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'm 100% with you on, you can't be everything to everybody. Like, not everybody is going to like everything, but being really specific about who your customer is, knowing what your strong point is, knowing what your customers like, you're able to iterate and, you know, create multiple variations of that, like, really strong best-selling silhouette and get more mileage too on kind of the business side of things out of you developed this one pattern and you got it to fit really well and everybody loves it. And now you can just make minor tweaks and, you know, change the fabric for future seasons. It's a smart way to go.
And that's something that, like, I've been doing since the beginning, because I knew even when I first started doing fashion design, I was like, I love outerwear is like my thing. This is what I wear in my everyday life. Like, you have a boring outfit on, you throw some cool outerwear on, add some accessories to it, and suddenly you look amazing. So that's been something that I've really taken with my brand and I've run with, because I'm like, you know, I'm not the person who's necessarily wearing dresses and, you know, who's wearing, you know, one-off occasion wear. People are always like, why don't you design more gowns? Like, you used to wear so many gowns as an opera singer. And I was like, because they're for one time. Like, I want people to wear these clothes over and over and over and over again. Like, I want people wearing my stuff for 25, 30 years. Like, I don't want this just to be a throwaway outfit. Like, I want this to be something you're going to have and you're going to treasure it for a lifetime.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've never quite thought about the fact that, like, in general, people do kind of look at clothes as like throwaway. Like, I wore this dress to one event and now I can't wear it again. Or I wore this to one wedding and don't want to wear it again. Or posted it on Instagram once and now I'm done with it. But outerwear doesn't really have that, like, people don't think of outerwear as in that way as much. Like, I think even kind of in the throwaway culture of today, outerwear is something that people expect to wear many times and keep it for years. Like, it is still kind of like investment piece in the mind of more people. So I love that. So is By Vinnick, is it a lot of a reflection of your personal style, or did it maybe stem from that, but now has kind of become its own thing based on what your clients really love?
I would say it's a mixture of both. When I first started designing these clothes, like, I was making stuff that, like, I couldn't find. Like, I was like, I cannot find anything that fits me, that fits through my hip. Like, it's just impossible. Or I can't find the length that fits me. Everything makes me look like from Steve Urkel. Where it was like, you know, something would fit on top, but it won't fit through my hip. Because as most women, I'm sure you know this especially, like, most women are two different sizes, like the size on top versus the size on bottom. They're usually very different sizing. So that was something that, like, I really took into consideration with my designs. And I've really just seen what does the best. And I've seen, like, and I've also seen, like, you know, what my limitations are. Like, what do I design really well? And what are the things that I'm either not passionate about them, or I just, like, there's other people in the marketplace that do it better. And, you know, I'm not going to try to compete with somebody who's, you know, within my niche, that they do this one thing and they do it really well. Like, I'm not going to go and try to compete with them. I want to stay in my lane and I want to do what I know I can do the best and what I'm super passionate about. So I would say everything that I design, I do wear in my real life and I do enjoy. There's a few things that, like, customers have begged me to bring back that I'm just like, oh, I'm over it. I'm no longer inspired by this. But you know, if there's demand for those pieces, of course I listen. It may take me a few years to actually follow through with it, my variations dusters. But you know, I definitely do listen to my customer. And if there are those things that they're like, I really want this back, I definitely listen to them. And I definitely do bring them back with, you know, a new twist on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. Well, Suzanne, this has been so fun to meet you and hear more of your story. I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
I think the value would be bold, take up space, wear that thing you love. It doesn't matter if you're going to an occasion. Life is an occasion. Wear it.
I can see that in your pieces, and they're beautiful and bold and just so cool. So I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah, this has been so great. Where can people find out more about you and see everything you're designing online?
So you can find us on our website, which is byvinnick.com. You can find us on Instagram. We're sometimes on TikTok, and you can also find our line on Wolf and Badger as well.
I'll put links to those in the show notes. And thank you again for your time today. This has been such a fun conversation.
Thank you so much.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. If you'd like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer, lifestyle, and values sent straight to your inbox, you can sign up for my email list at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.